This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 292 in the series. The session of this radio show shares my conversation with Franklin resident and author Aaron Govea. We had our conversation on the town common, yes, on a gorgeous day in May, while adhering to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. We talked of his popping to my Franklin radar as a dad blogger when in 2018, his son in kindergarten came home with a problem to do with some of his class's reaction to his fingernails being painted. Aaron set up a Twitter thread before he went to bed that night and woke up the next morning to find his phone exploding with notifications. Long story short, and you'll get the details in the conversation, as he made the media rounds, he got an offer to write a book about toxic masculinity. His book is now due to be published June 16th. We had a great wide-ranging conversation about parenting, both boys and girls, the needs for good role models for our youth, the minimum wage workers who are the heroes in this pandemic, the nature of work that is changing, and maybe there is a silver lining in this pandemic. The show notes include links to Aaron's Twitter profile, his Amazon book page, his book page, and to the quote that I botched during the conversation. The recording runs around 28 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Aaron. Steve Sherlock for Franklin Matters and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM, or 102.9 on the radio dial in the Franklin area. We're here on the town common in the first of this post-coronavirus era, socially distanced with Aaron Govea. Aaron, pleased to meet you here today.
You too. This is great. I could work out here all the time. This is fantastic.
If New England weather was like this all the time, I would have tried this earlier for sure. But New England weather being as fickle as it is, you know.
True. We're going to get snow tomorrow.
Please don't say that. It's Memorial Day. We're supposed to start our plants, right?
Right.
But from what I understand, you don't do too much gardening. Your wife does.
Yeah, no, I can't grow anything. I'm trying my best to grow three tiny humans, and that's about it. I can't do any plants.
That's the big challenge. And we'll get into more on that. So, for those who don't know you, and clearly I don't know you so well, and that's why we're meeting. Can you tell us a little bit more about your Franklin story? What brought you here, and what keeps you here, other than the growing the three humans?
Well, I mean, despite only moving to Franklin 3 years ago, my Franklin story starts, 17 or 18 years ago, actually. One of my first jobs out of college was working for the Milford Daily News. And just as it so happened, I became the Franklin education reporter, and I also covered the town of Millis. So, while I was here, I fell in love with the town. It was a little smaller then, but yeah. it was on the up and up.
Sure.
And that was clear. And I got to meet, some great people on the school committee, and, it was just a really good time for me. I was in my early 20s and I was learning about, town governments and kind of, found that that's, I used my experience as a reporter to find out where I wanted to live eventually. And frankly, I liked Franklin's town government, the format of town government.
Right.
I think it's the town council is much preferable to the open town meetings.
Yes.
So that was, I'm kind of a nerd. My dad was I grew up in Norton, Mass, and my dad was a town official. He was a selectman and a finance committee member. He's still the moderator right now.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of a town government nerd, and took that into Franklin and decided that I really liked it, along with just how beautiful a community is. And then lived on the Cape for a while. And when we moved back, we wanted to find a place that wasn't our hometown, because my wife and I are both from the same town in Norton.
Oh, okay.
And so that was kind of out, because we didn't want to raise, my parents had grown up in Norton. I grew up in Norton.
Right.
And we just kind of wanted to get away a little bit. So we were choosing between a few towns, and we came to our neighborhood around Marvin Ave and fell in love with it immediately.
Yes.
And, had to have it. And luckily it all worked out. And now we love this neighborhood. We love this town. It's been 3 years, 3 years later, it's the best decision we ever made.
Yep.
And couldn't be happier here.
Good. Good. Yeah. I moved here 25 years ago, and it's our best decision by all means.
Yep.
We raised our two kids here. Both went through the high school. Both are through college. They're out on their own. One in an apartment in Worcester, one in Dedham. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah, life is good here. This,
it is.
And Franklin Matters is keeping me busy and learning still something all the time. So
exactly. That's how you got to do it.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yep. So I follow you on Twitter, and I know, I think you came to at least, or my attention via Twitter in terms of the @daddyfile, excuse me, is your Twitter handle.
Yep.
And I think the attention around your son's fingernails and that story, I think early last year, if I remember.
So in the fall of 2018, I took to my Twitter account, and I've been on Twitter for, man, about, I don't know, 12, 13 years.
Okay.
I started as a dad blogger, and that was the genesis of how I got online. And it's kind of morphed into the intersection of parenting and politics for me. But, you know, in fall of 2018, my wife called me at work. She walked over to Davis there, as usual, to pick up my sons from school. And my then 5-year-old, when he came out, usually he comes out of the school and he's skipping and bouncing like a ball of energy. And
mm-hmm.
This time he walked over, slumped shoulders, and just collapsed into my wife's arms. And he was inconsolable to the point where she had to call me at work because she couldn't get out of him what was wrong.
Oh.
And so we calmed him down, and then we come to find out he had worn his fingernails painted to kindergarten.
Right.
And he had taken some abuse from other kids in the class about it, saying, you know, that's, what are you doing? That's only for girls. Boys right. can't wear that. Take it off. And, you know, we teach him, you know, unless you're in danger, try to work it out, try and talk.
Right.
So, you know, he didn't tell his teacher, cause his teacher absolutely would have put a stop to it right away, but he tried to work it out himself, and he just, you know, didn't really work. So when he came home, he was heartbroken. And, you know, we dealt with that all night. We, you know, kind of told him to, we told him, you know, a lot of guys wear nail polish and it's fine. And if he likes it, that's all that matters. And, you know, after we went to bed, I wrote a Twitter, Twitter thread about it. And I was pretty heated. You know, I didn't exactly edit that one. I wrote that one pretty mad because, you know, someone messes with your kid and it's,
right.
it's hard. I mean, it's
yeah.
really hard. And because I do think that behavior, obviously 5 and 6-year-olds are learning that from somewhere.
Correct.
And I know exactly where, because I see it all the time. I'm in that space all the time. And, you know, they get it from parents, and they get it from society in general, and messaging and ads. And
sure.
And it's just too bad. And I took to Twitter and talked about how I think toxic masculinity and, you know, that kind of limiting stuff really hurts boys. And it doesn't allow them to express their full range of emotion. And I put it on Twitter, and I talked about how, you know, my son loved in past tense now, Rob Gronkowski, because Gronk's gone now.
Right.
And, you know, he asked if, because to a 5-year-old, who's tougher than Rob Gronkowski?
True.
And he asked if Gronk wore nail polish, and I may have told a white lie and told him that he did. So I put that on there. You know, I put a whole bunch of stuff on there, and I hit send right before I went to bed. And when I woke up the next morning, I thought my phone was malfunctioning.
Yeah, it had blown up.
It was like a slot machine. The notifications wouldn't stop. And immediately, you know, when I saw the numbers, I knew that it was going to be a very interesting day. And sure enough, before I'd even left the house for work in the morning, People Magazine called. And then that led to, you know, Good Morning America
right.
and USA Today and Mashable. And eventually we ended up on the Today Show for it. But what an incredible, you know, and from that bad, I just want to reiterate how, first of all, how much good came out of it from around the world.
Right.
People were sending pictures of themselves with nail polish. Offices were painting their nails. I mean, it was really astounding. And then locally in Franklin, I can't tell you the level of support we got from this town. It was amazing.
Yep.
You know, we had one woman come in. And she used to live on our street, and she just knocked on our door. She had figured out where we were. She knocked on our door. She brought over all this nail polish stuff, and she said, "Sam, we're gonna sit down right now, and I'm gonna do your nails." And she did it right there in our living room. She brought her daughter. It was fantastic. And then someone else created a graphic where, you know, urging everyone to paint their nails on a certain day, all the students in town. So, I mean, I can't speak highly enough about what this community did for us during that time. It was really something.
Yeah.
And I'll always appreciate that. And, yeah, from there, I mean, we had tons of media. And then one of the calls was from a book publisher asking if I wanted to write a book about raising boys in the age of toxic masculinity.
Sure.
And writing a book's always been my dream.
Okay.
So I jumped at the opportunity and I said yes, and took a long time to write because I didn't know what I was doing. I had never written a book before, but Raising Boys to Be Good Men is coming out June 16th. So it's on its way. I haven't even seen a copy yet because COVID has closed down there off my publisher's offices.
Things have changed just a little bit.
It's amazing. So the whole journey's been absolutely wild and unexpected, but hopefully some good things are going to come out of it.
Hopefully indeed. Yep, I pre-ordered a copy. Obviously, that'll come out when I think I got the Kindle version, so it'll drop on the day of publication, and I'll begin to read it and find out. Based on certainly what you've said so far, one of the pieces around the toxic masculinity, or how are you, there's really a lack of good role models on the male side.
Yeah.
It used to be even when I was growing up, you probably had a few heroes in your day, but I was listening to another podcast, and all the heroes these days are like, you know, Barbie and game things and, you know, they're not people anymore.
Yeah.
We've kind of lost those.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. And I've been lucky enough to have a bunch of good role models in my life, first and foremost, you know, starting with my dad.
Right.
And, you know, I view a role model as somebody who gives back and thinks about the greater good. And my dad's modeled that for me my whole life. He was a two-time selectman in Norton. He was actually he's still the youngest appointed official in town history. He was 18 and a senior in high school when he was appointed to the finance committee.
Cool.
And he served as moderator and basically every position you can have in town. He's done that because he's of a rare kind of dying breed that believes you have a civic obligation.
True.
And you're supposed to give back. And that's really what I base my role models on. You know, are you looking out for the most vulnerable among us? Are you looking out for everybody else and not just yourself?
Yep.
And I think you're right. I think there's a real shortage of that. And, you know, unfortunately, it starts at the top, and it's led, you know, I know we don't want to get too political, but, you know, when that's modeled from the top, it's really hard to combat. And so that's part of the reason I wrote the book. I think we should have an emphasis on helping each other out and looking out for each other. And I think especially now in these COVID-19 times, that's become more important than ever.
Yeah, I think the coronavirus certainly has exposed, and I'm certainly not the first one to say, but it's really exposed the gaps in our society, right? Yeah. Our health system was broken before. COVID didn't make it.
No.
It's just exposing the problems that we have.
Yeah.
The nursing homes are an issue because the nursing homes in their pricing model was such that the minimum expenses they could have allowed them to function. And oh, by the way, that also causes such that there's no infection control when something comes around like that. So they don't have a capability of responding. You can go on and on and on. I'm certainly not the expert in that arena, but it's given us an opportunity to figure out what do we really want.
Absolutely. And I mean, to that end, look who's being revered right now. It's the minimum wage workers. It's the low earners who, you know, it's the grocery store workers. It's you know, there's been a lot of talk about the minimum wage and you want burger flippers to earn $15 an hour. Well, you know, as drive-thrus were the only thing open, those were the people serving you your food lately. So I think you're right. It's exposed a lot of cracks in the armor. And we're going to be, I think you're going to see a lot of fundamental change in so many ways, even as far as the way we work now.
Yes.
You're seeing a lot of people can do work from home.
Yes.
Which means you can live anywhere and work remotely. I mean, that's a sea change. That's immense.
It is.
And I really hope that we roll with it and keep the momentum going. And maybe there's some kind of silver lining coming out of this whole thing.
Yeah. I'm hopeful of that. I was fortunate that in my roles, especially most recently for you may not be aware, but others have, may have heard that I retired at the end of September. My role had been a global position, so I was having a conference call with Hong Kong or in the morning or the evening, et cetera. So a lot of the Zoom calls, we were using Skype and the Microsoft tools. We, all of those were easy for me to use. So I've made that transition into retirement. Instead of going to municipal building or the senior center, now I'm having Zoom calls for these conversations. Yep. And it's easy for me to do so because I've had that experience. But even in the conversations with Jamie Helen, our town administrator, there are things that they're figuring out that they now can do things. They don't have to be in the office in order to do the payroll. Yep. Until this, they always had to be there, right? So, you know, the genie's out of the bottle. Is it going to go back? No. Should we go back? Maybe to some things, but let's bring just the best of those forward.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's, frankly, you know, I just switched jobs as well. You know, I was vice president of a PR agency in Boston. And part of the reason, a big part of the reason I quit was because, you know, I was working for somebody who didn't really see the wisdom or the value in remote work.
Right.
And, you know, going into Boston every day, even though we live near the train station, it's an hour ride into Boston. So door to door, it's about an hour and 20 minutes commute each way. And now, you know, I left that job. I don't know how wise that was. I did it in the beginning of March, right before the world ended. And very luckily for me, very fortunately for me, I landed on my feet in a great job as PR director at the Trustees of Reservations. And, you know, right now I'm working from home full time as the whole organization is. And I can't tell you how rewarding it is to do a full day's work, do it well, and then be able to have dinner with my family and, you know, water the plants outside and, you know, take them for a bike ride later in the day. It's amazing. And it improves your quality of life so much that, you know, no amount of money's worth missing out on that.
Yeah, I agree. I think to the extent that clearly I have financial services, they were, if anything, at the leading edge of that tech revolution, you know, going remote, et cetera. Following the Sun model and all that. Other companies now got forced into it via this, and now they're figuring out, hey, this is not bad.
This
we
is
can
not
do
bad.
This.
And it might be cheaper.
And it might be. Now, clearly, there are some, you know, assembly line work. There is some work that still you're going to need to be there.
Yeah.
Clearly. We mentioned before, the supermarkets, the delivery people, you're still going to have to do the hands-on.
Yep.
But for a lot of the other tech or information-based stuff, as long as you got a powered system and a good connection, you can be anywhere.
Absolutely. Although, yeah, schools. I want to put schools in the must-have category because remote learning, while the teachers are doing a great job, this is hard.
Yeah,
well, this is hard.
Having been, you know, I started to become a high school English teacher. That didn't work out, so I went through the corporate world. But there are age groups, clearly, that benefit from that.
Yes.
So, yeah, a kindergartner, no way.
Yep.
College education, absolutely.
Yep.
Master's, you can do that. And there's some graduation along that spectrum there. But even when we were working remote, our team at least decided to work from work on Wednesday.
Yep.
Because we still wanted some of that other interaction. Just, you know, hang by the cube, have some other conversations that... You know, okay, I could talk about him, but it wasn't just I'll pick him up on the phone call. You know, why disturb him for that? I'll just, some of those conversations you still have to have in person.
Yeah, no, I don't think I'd ever want to work 100% full-time from home. I get a lot of energy, you know, I think it's from being in newsrooms when I was younger.
Yeah.
I get a lot of energy from just being in the room and bouncing ideas off people right then and there and having the conversations, the run-in conversations that you don't get to have when you're a worker from home. So I think a balance. I think, you know, we've been unbalanced. I think now is a good time to look for that balance and really try and find a middle ground.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Good. So the book is launching soon. Normally you would do some sort of a book tour, but I think under these circumstances, if anything, you're going to do stuff virtually.
You know, yeah, I'm in the process. So the book comes out June 16th, and I'm in the process of trying to figure out how to market a book when you can't do it in person. So, you know, I'm reaching out to local bookstores and seeing what they're doing virtually. I'll be very honest, I don't have anything planned yet. 3 weeks away, so that's kind of terrifying. But, you know, a lot of it's going to be virtual. A lot of it's going to be online, you know, just trying to rely on my network to spread news of this book and get it in front of new eyeballs and people who might benefit from it. Because, you know, even though it's Raising Boys to Be Good Men is the title, it's really not just for parents of boys. It's for parents of girls as well. It's for any parent.
For parents.
I mean, and it talks about, because everything is linked. Everything overlaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
They all touch, you know, whether we're talking about gender stereotypes. I mean, yeah, those hurt boys, but they hurt girls as well.
Absolutely.
You know, and I hit on, I think there's 36, we broke it down into 36 tips in the book.
Okay.
Everything from, you know, how I can't stand gender reveal parties, if you've seen those.
Oh, I've seen a few of those, and
they make me crazy. Because it sets up a, you know, I can't tell you how many gender reveals I've seen where, you know, maybe the dad finds out it's a girl, and you see that moment of flicker of disappointment on his face because he wanted a boy, and it's
right.
like... Right. It's like, why just be happy, you know, especially if you've had bad luck with pregnancies, just let's just be happy that, you know, we got a healthy kid coming.
Yeah.
But it touches on everything from gender to politics to, you know, gun violence and how that's tied in with young, angry men.
There is a connection to that cycle.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
If you're not, and I've had conversations, there's another review interview coming out with the Safe Coalition. Clearly, they're in the addiction recovery space for a lot of the same reasons, but coming at it from a different angle, because people are going to drugs for an answer because they're just not satisfied with whatever they've got.
Yeah.
And some people will go on the anger side and get a gun and then go shoot things. So it's, yeah.
And then you have the mental health aspect tied in with that because, you know, men are supposed to be strong and they're not supposed to admit that there's anything wrong. And they're just supposed to, you know, grit their teeth and get through it.
Right.
But, you know, what happens when all that pent up anger that you've never been taught to deal with just rises to the surface? I think that what happens is you get mass shootings and you get domestic violence and, you know, you get this whole host of problems that, you know, it's not all because of toxic masculinity, but it plays a huge part in it. And it's really tough. Even when you preach this stuff to your own kids over and over again, you send them to school and you lose control of that narrative real quick.
Yeah.
And they learn from their friends who are learning from their parents. Mm-hmm. And you just have to keep beating the drum over and over again. It's not one conversation. It's a million conversations at different times.
Yeah, just be consistent, at least from my experience. We were consistent. And, there were tough times. No. And we had two girls, there were tough times. My wife was a saint. But then all of a sudden, when they get to 20s, it's like, Dad, you were right.
Yeah.
Duh.
Can't wait for that payoff. Something to look forward to.
It'll come. It'll come.
Great.
Let's hope they're still healthy by the time you get there.
Yeah, right? But yeah, it's all about that. It's about the importance of having these conversations. It's about the importance of just letting our boys know that they can do other things. Like, case in point, I'm a huge Patriots fan. I'm a huge football fan. My dad, he's coming up on his 49th year of season tickets to the Patriots.
Sure.
So I haven't missed many home games at all. And, you know, when I knew I was having a son, I thought, okay, well, you know, I'm going to have a football buddy and a sports buddy. And, you know, my oldest, he is so smart and he's so wonderful, but he's in ways that, you know, have nothing to do with sports.
Sure.
He's not my sports kid, and that took a little bit for me to
adjust.
It really did, and it kind of culminated when he had, at his old school, he had some choices of extracurricular activities.
Okay.
And this was years ago, but, you know, the choices were, you know, football or, you know, those rainbow loom bracelet making things. And he told me he chose football, and I said, "What in what universe are you choosing football? You know, you can't stand football." And he said, "Well, I know you like it, so I'll do it." You know, and that was a wake-up call to me. Like, all right, you know, I can't put my stuff on my son. So I told him, you know, go do the rainbow loom. You like it. Go do what you like. That's important.
Right.
And, you know, the book is about how I've screwed up in every possible way and been wrong in almost every way and had to correct myself. So this is not coming from a holier-than-thou point. It's coming from, I'm an idiot and I made all these mistakes and hopefully you can avoid them point of view.
That's a rational approach. Indeed, because we do make mistakes along the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All mistakes.
Yeah. I remember the first time I was having, probably it was a lunch, and Oreo cookies.
Yep.
I'm a cookie monster.
Absolutely.
So I just took the Oreo, and I have a big mouth, so I just, the entire Oreo went in the mouth. And my daughter started to do the same thing, and she's maybe 18 months. It was like, no. So we had to get into the entire, you know, like take it apart, yep. Little pieces. Because, yeah, there's another quote that I have somewhere, I don't remember exactly, but they will learn from observation more than they will learn from what you say.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Absolutely. And that's why, that's going back to role models, that's why you have to try and be the best role model you can be. And for me, that's taken a lot of adjustments and, you know, just tough conversations where, you know, even apologizing to your kid when you are wrong, that's tough in itself. And,
yeah.
And I've had to do that. And you just have to keep at it. And consistency is the key. And eventually, hopefully, when they're in their 20s, they're going to come back and say, hey, thanks. And then we pass that on and they model it for their kids. And that's right. That's why I really believe, you know, that's why I'm trying to reach parents, especially parents of young kids, because they hold the key. You know, it's tough to change grown human beings' mind.
Yeah. Once you're wired, you're wired.
Exactly.
But to try and get them before they're fully set.
Yep. And so that's the crux of my book. Let's do this so that we can raise a generation of boys who, you know, are a little more accepting and aren't as rigid in gender stereotypes and, you know, contribute to household chores when they get older with their, you know, with their partners. It's all important and it really is all intertwined. It's all meshed together. And that's why we need to look at all of it and try and come out on the right side of this.
Good. Well, I've enjoyed this conversation. Hopefully those listening have as well, even with the, you know, some of the background sounds. We won't edit out those, but trust us, this is a gorgeous New England May day. And people are finally outside enjoying it as well. So thank you for taking some time. In the show notes, I'll include, you know, appropriate links. You'll get a chance to review those to make sure this other people, as they listen to this, they don't have to scramble to write something. They'll be able to find it in the show notes as well.
Absolutely. Thank you.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.